Hello and welcome to Nerdrunners. I'm Mark, and joining me as always is the man who claimed he was doing street magic, but the police told him to put his snake away in public. It's Steph.
I have no idea what their issue was. Hello, everybody. good evening, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm better than I was. Better than I was at the last recording. I'm still getting better. So my time is kind of being spent alternatively, kind of in bed and trying to take my mind off of anything bad. But we're here today to very quickly get on to the topic of the new data pack in the new cycle that is Caligoda.
We've got 19 new cards. I think they're scrimping a bit now. They're running out of ideas. They have to go to just 19 per data pack now. Can't do the full 20.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised by that, I have to admit. I was sort of like, oh, it's fine. But I was like, oh, it seems an odd number to pick. Maybe we'll get 21 in the next pack. Who knows?
Well, I think every pack's going to have the new 6 per deck. Of the new 6 per deck cards.
Yeah, I always forget about those. For some reason.
I know, it's a fascinating new mechanic. Should we kick off with that one then?
We can do.
Sure. Cool. It is Ramajan Reliant 550 BMI, which is a mouthful. Which is funny because they're eating cereal on the front of it. Also data tapping into their brains. It's brand new type of hardware called consumer grade, and because you can get this shit everywhere, you can get 6 in your deck, which
indeed
is a natty new mechanic. And it reads little trash can icon: prevent up to X net or brain damage. Trash cards from the top of your stack equal to the amount of damage prevented. X is the number of copies of Ramajan Reliant 550 BMI installed, including the one just trashed. Limits 6 per deck. So, what do we think about this? This is new and exciting.
I don't know. It's a scary concept, because you're just cycling your deck. I mean, if you have a levy in hand, it's great, because you can just go in and say, yeah, I'll just take that brain damage. Yeah, I can happily hit that, I suppose, 6 advanced cerebral overwriter. But yeah, it's an interesting way of dealing with the damage, which is quite nice. I guess we'll see how much of it comes into play, because you know you say you've got two out, well, you trash top two cards if you need to, and then they're in the, you know, maybe there are two more of your Ramajan Reliance are in the bin. It's kind of it's an odd one.
Yeah, it's the analog way though, trashing the stuff that you need.
Stuff that you need, maybe, and then hopefully you'll pull it back later on, maybe.
You can always deja vu them back if you're playing in Anarch. The one thing I find really interesting is this is like, and this I think this may upset you, because this is one of the first cards beside Monolith to prevent brain damage. So maybe, you know, those people
don't
who are,
you, don't you say it.
Maybe Monolith is going to finally be retired in place of Ramajan Reliant.
Oh, you're the worst. Yeah, 6 Ramajan Reliance in place of one or two Monoliths.
Six Ramajan Reliance costs you the same as 1/3 of Monolith.
I don't know what your problem is. Monolith for life, yo. No, it's an interesting thing. I'm not too convinced by Ramajan Reliant personally, but it's more the introduction of the new 6 card limit that makes me curious about it.
Yeah, I think the consumer grade hardware that the three runners are going to get, it's going to be interesting. I'm more interested in the 6 per deck events that each of them are getting, which we'll start seeing, I think, from the next data pack.
I think so.
Yeah, because I think that's really interesting that there's now events that are 6 per deck, and they do stuff like Ramajan Reliant for cumulative use of the same card again and again. But no, I think it's going to be, I don't know, I feel this one is going to be that's not a very good card until someone really makes it work, and then everyone's like, oh shit man, Ramajan Reliant for life.
Yeah, but it'll take some time for that to happen, I think. It's so much deck space.
See, well, what I've...
potentially a useless card.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard people saying, oh, you just page Piper them out and you thin your deck and then you can just get to the good stuff quicker. But then it's like, well, you're putting kind of, in theory, six useless cards in your deck to thin it out. Which I think is kind of a pretty pants idea anyway. But
I mean, I'm all in favour of you know, kind of putting in new techniques and new jank, but
yeah,
it seems a little bit too janky.
Well, I'm kind of interested as well because I've recently gone back to Jinteki, and hopefully we'll get time to discuss our decks a bit later.
Sure.
Because I've kind of realised that people have a little bit forgotten how to play around super net damage Jinteki, and I was consistently getting flat lines out of PE because, well, Faust is still a thing, and people, you know, discard cards from hand, and then they hit a snare or a fetal AI, and then they're dead, and I laugh. Because I'm a terrible person, but that serves them right for playing Faust. but no, yes, I think, and we have like a new brain damagey Bioroid in this data pack anyway, so it could be interesting that maybe there's going to be more brain and net damage, and maybe we'll start shying away. We're never going to shy away from the meat damage as long as MBN is still a thing. But I guess it's interesting that it's in a way, I'm kind of glad it's not another just meat damage protection card. Because then you just have this over Plascrete, maybe. Though this is more dysfunctional Anok type of Plascrete if it was meat damage. But I like the idea that it's kind of net or brain, and you know, if Jinteki does rise again, then this is going to be like the auto include to get around their overwriters and Junebugs.
Mm. Well, it's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Next up is one of my favourite cards, which was in my intro, which is Street Magic. Street Magic is a zero-cost resource for Anarchs, virtual resource, with text Unbroken Subroutines resolve in the order of your choice.
You know what the best thing about this card is?
The art?
Well, aside from the art, it's a virtual resource, so Apex can run it.
Hey! this is a really, really good thing that kind of helps me out a ton, because I'm a very aggressive runner.
Yeah.
So when I hit a Heimdall, or a Wall of Thorns, or a Marcus, or an Archer, you know, which happened in the last tournament. I just ran face first into an Archer. It was not good times.
Oh, man.
But the it allows you to just trigger the end of the run sub before any of the other subroutines, so you can completely avoid them, which is really nice if you're really into face checking.
I'm really holding out for when Little Engine becomes like the must-have piece of ice, and then you can just put your Street Magic down, run Little Engine three times, and you just made 15 credits.
Oh man, but yeah, that'd be awful.
No, but I'm gonna go back to Apex soon, kind of because of this card, because obviously with Endless Hunger, you want to be breaking those ender runs. You hate it when you hit something, and there's other awful, awful things that you might need, like a Mimic or a Faust or something else in your deck for. And then Street Magic is kind of that protection against those nasty things until you can get your support breaker for Endless Hunger out as well. So I really like the idea of this in Apex, and I'm hopefully going to give it a go soon. But you're right, the art is also just fantastic on it as well. I just kind of want to run it for the art too.
No, I'm going to be throwing it to all of my decks, I think. Just simply because that's the type of runner I am.
Yeah.
I am a very aggressive runner, and it's genuinely a godsend if you can have one of these out.
Yeah, and it's one influence as well, so it's easily put it in other decks. Zero cost to get out. It's a really nice thing, and I think this as well might be really nice for newer players as well, who are just kind of learning about kind of face checking and stuff like that, and they can kind of get this down and you kind of go run hard and not have to worry. Because if you think about it, there is quite a few kind of multi-sub with at least one end the run subroutine pieces of ice that, you know, that other sub is generally quite nasty, so being able to just to end the run first or to trigger the other stuff a la Little Engine, then it's quite nice. And I don't know, I guess we'll see more and more kind of interesting multi-sub stuff coming soon, hopefully, and I'd quite like to see more of the Little Engine style. If we get more Little Engine style kind of runner benefits type subroutines, then that'd be quite nice as well. It'd be interesting kind of design space to see that.
No, it's an interesting one.
Cool. Next up, we have our run event for the Anarchs. It's Run Amok. It's 3 cost. It's a sabotage, because that's what Anarchs do best when they run. And it says, make a run. When the run...
visions of the Beastie Boys in my head.
That's totally what they listen to when they're...
I know.
That's
what I'd listen
hacking.
To. That's what Max is listening to. She's not really punk rock. It's just Beastie Boys on loop.
Well, they've got one coming up called Making an Entrance, which is totally you can fight for your right to party. And just like, anyway, tangent. Coming back, it says make a run. When the run ends, trash one piece of ice that was rezzed during this run. This is the gut punch inside job from the Anarchs, really, isn't it?
Yep. So this paired with street magic would be really, really funny against an archer. It's like, oh cool, run amok, res the archer, cool, well, I've got street magic, so I'll trigger the last one, and then I'm just going to get rid of that piece of ice.
Yeah, I think
because it doesn't specify that it has to be successful,
which is
so,
the best thing about this. Yep, you can bounce this, off that ice.
This put in with au revoir would be a very good thing as well for your au revoir economy, and then run again and get in.
Yeah, especially with the new criminal that's coming out soon, where he can jack out on encountering sentries, so you can run amok into a sentry, jack out, and trash the sentry. And it puts the corp in such a terrible position. It's like, do I res this ice and lose it, and then you come back in, or do I just let you in? It's the inside job conundrum of, well, you're gonna bypass that first piece of ice anyway, so I'm gonna have to res the outermost and then the second piece of ice to at least make you hit the second piece of ice. And it's like, oh, it's a pain. I think it's a wonderful card, and again, the run doesn't have to be successful, which is beautiful for those kind of run events, which are just a bit of a pain if it has to be successful and you don't know what you're running into. And it's also, you may trash one piece of ice, so you could keep running, you can pass 3 pieces of ice and then take your pick as which one you want to get rid of. Which, there's so many nice little things about this card.
Again, might be interesting for your what's it deck, Apex.
Yeah, I have thought about this as well, actually, because then you can get rid of... It's kind of... I think it would fill the space that Prey is kind of taking up in Apex at the moment for me, of kind of get ditch... Yeah, kind of maybe even run it alongside Prey. Prey can get rid of the low-strength stuff, and then you just run amok into the high stuff and high-res stuff. And then, you can get in, and then you street magic away other things, and street magic your way past or into other things, and, oh, man, yeah. This Anarch's got a pretty good set of cards, didn't they?
Yes, they did. But criminals didn't do too badly either.
I think pretty much everyone did quite well in this pack.
Well, Jinteki kind of struggled, but we'll get to that.
I don't know.
Next up, high stakes job, a 6 cost run event. Make a run on a server with at least one piece of ice, one piece of unresed ice. Sorry. When the run ends, gain 12 credits if it was successful.
Now, you know how I said there's been kind of a resurgence of Ken recently, and even I went to a tournament a couple of weeks back, and the first 2 games I played were both against Ken. The runner was playing Ken. This is just like cementing the Ken comeback, I think. It's just, this is perfect for Ken. It's a run event. It costs 3 if you have a public terminal, if you have 3 public terminals out. You're going to get 1 from playing it anyway as Ken. And I even had someone play it against me, and the worst thing about it was they... they siphoned me, then they shut down the ice that was on R&D, and then they high-stakes jobbed into R&D and finished the turn with, 30 credits.
Just like, wow.
I was just so sad at that point. So, well,
you could also stick something like a bank job on and then run it on a remote server.
That would work too.
with a doppelganger.
Just run again. Yeah. No, I think this is great. I like the high risk, high reward element to it. And again, criminal have enough stuff if you've femmed that piece of ice already, then it's kind of, you're going to bypass it and
Or you run it after account siphon. That's what I'm looking for.
Run
an account siphon, clear your tags, then making a high stakes job when they've got no money to res ice.
Yeah, and then you guarantee to get in. I think this is a great card.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to play with.
The problem is now finding space in the Ken deck for so many, because now you've got three of these in there. You want to keep the Dirty Laundries anyway. You're keeping the Siphons. It's like, all right, it's 9 cards, 12 three public terminals. You probably want Shore Gamble in there. It's just like, you run out of space so fast now for Ken. It's crazy.
Yeah.
To build like a 60 card Ken deck.
Right. Do you want to tell me about your love letter to the next card?
I do. I've been banging on about this since about two weeks before Caligoda came out, because I think this is a brilliant card.
Listeners, you have no idea.
this is like we need a jingle like Mark's card of the pack. That was terrible. No.
Yes. Yes, it was. Get on with it.
You can tell I don't have a musical bone in my body. It's a 3-cost killer for criminals. It's Mongoose. It's 2 influence, and you cannot use Mongoose to break subroutines on more than one piece of ice per run. And it's 1 credit to break up to 2 sentry subroutines, and it's 2 credits to boost by 2 strength, and it starts at base 1 strength. This is a great piece of ice-breaking stuff.
It is. I don't like agreeing with you, as most of our listeners will be able to tell. But yeah, you're right. It's solid.
Yeah.
I hate this card.
The thing I like about this is you now have a good alternative to spending your influence on Mimic and Data Sucker out of Criminal. Because it always bugged me that Criminals are supposedly the killer faction, yet they're always importing Mimic to do their dirty work for them. And if you play Mongoose instead of your Mimic and Data Sucker, that's probably one Mimic and 2 Data Suckers in your deck, maybe. So that's 3 influence you free it for something else. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week or last episode about use of influence. And it's great. Criminals, you know, you're packing probably 3 fairies anyway. That couples really well with Mongoose, so you don't have to worry too much about the 2 Sentry Deep servers. Even in all the time I've been playing Mongoose over the last few weeks, I don't think I've hit a single corporation that double sentried a server, because if you think about a typical deck build for a corporation, they maybe have 6 sentries in there, maybe 8 if they're really pushing sentry stuff.
Yeah,
that's 6 to 8 cards out of 49, assuming they don't go over and they're doing weird things like industrial genomics, but then they don't run much ice anyway. So yeah, it's like the odds of them drawing their sentries and being able to double sentry a server before you get a second killer, be it another Mongoose, because then you can get through the 2 sentry server or a fairy or something down. This is just so good. And if you compare it to, because I've been trying to, you know, run decent criminal killers for a while out of both Leela and Ken, and the options have been pay 9 for a femme, but then that's just a pain to break ice with. Any low strength sentry is not too bad, but the 2 credits to boost by 1 strength is just annoying.
It's a nice alternative to Garrote. Like, I like Garrote.
I do
as
well.
It's very economic breaker, but there's so much MU and it's so expensive to install.
Yeah, it's you feel like, well, why don't I just run Femme if you're thinking about Garrote and just hope you don't run into anything too. Because every time I've run Garrote, I've just been poor, because it's just such a big investment to get out. Then you have to think about, you can't have, if you have Garrote, you're so limited to what other things you have, unless you have decent amount of MU spare, which you probably don't if you're Criminal, because you're probably at 5 with your, unless you're running Boxy or something like that. Then, and then there's Ninja, which is pretty good, but again, it's 3 credits to boost by 5, and it's base 0, so you're always going to have to invest 3 credits in Ninja.
Yeah.
And then I think that's 1 to break every subroutine. Whereas Mongoose, it's cheap to install, it can get through. Like, I've been laughing my ass off coming face to face with Kamainu's, because if you have 4 cards in hand, it costs you 2 credits to get past a Kamainu.
Yep.
It's bonkers good. Rotor Turret is 1 credit to get past.
Yep.
It's annoying when you come across even number, anything 4 strength, 4 or 6 strength sentries are annoying to get past. But then you have the added advantage of those sentries typically have multiple subroutines, so then you kind of save a bit of money because you're 1 credit to break 2 anyway.
Yeah.
No, I think this is absolutely filling like the killer hole that Criminals have had for a while. Of some, like a nice reliable, because if you think about stuff like Corroda as like a base equivalent for like Fractors, it's cheap to install. It's not a bad base strength, and then it's just kind of, you just pump and it feels fairly cheap unless you hit something big. Kind of Gordian Blade or Zoo are the kind of the two main kind of Dakota ones that you kind of see a lot, and Zoo gets really expensive the more you have to pump it, and Gordian is,
oh yeah,
4 credits to get out can be a bit of a hit sometimes, but yeah, I feel this kind of Mongoose kind of fits along with those in that kind of design space of, it's kind of a cheapish to install icebreaker that's going to get through most stuff for not too much money. It's going to have its problems, but then what icebreaker doesn't? You can't always run the numbers and say, oh well, you know, statistically Garrot is a better investment over, you know, 18 more turns. It's just, I don't give a shit. Like, it's for what it does, I think Mongoose is great.
I have to agree.
Yeah. Right.
Sorry.
Fulfilled.
Is that your system now?
Yeah, I think I'm good. I think I've had my little Mongoose moment. And also, cool. It's quite neat as well.
You've had your Mongoose moment, have you?
Just going to say, it's quite neat that we have Mongoose in the same pack as the Snake on Street Magic.
Yes, indeed. Next up, we have the new runner. Jasminda Serene, the girl behind the curtain, is a natural runner for Shaper, 45-15 with 0 link, and her special ability is that she avoids the first tag during each run. Now, it goes very well with the console in the data pack, which we'll get to.
Do you want to do that now as well? Because
yeah, all right.
They pair up so nicely.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
all right. You talk about Maya.
Cool. It's a unique console. Obviously, 3 to install. It gives you 2 MU. So we're talking like Grimoire level, kind of memory to cost ratio. it's 3 influence, and once per turn, immediately after you access a card from R&D. So sorry if it was a snare. You may add that card to the bottom of R&D if you do take one tag. Limit 1 console per player. So yeah, these obviously are a nice pair together because you're going to avoid that tag if you're doing this R&D shenanigans.
Oh yes. If you're digging deep in R&D, very good to use this with Maya. But it also, she also kind of pairs up with cards like Vamp.
Yeah.
And all the siphons, which are nice.
Yeah, Code Siphon, which everyone has forgotten about, but may make a comeback.
I kind of remember what Code Siphon does, actually.
Code Siphon, it's a zero-cost run event. I think it's 0 off the top of my head. I think it's like the other ones. And it's make a run on R&D. If successful, instead of accessing cards, search your stack for a program and install it, lowering it by 3 credits per piece of ice you went past.
Okay. Yeah, and it's...
And take a tag afterwards, obviously, like the other siphons.
Yep, you know, things... TGBT, it's easier to deal with stuff like News Team.
Yeah.
So
you'd only take the 1 tag from that?
Yep.
Data Raven.
Data Raven, keep forgetting about it. Gutenberg as well.
Yeah, there's so much of the stuff that's out at the moment. And as well, the thing that I forgot about her, it's... Each run! It's not one to turn.
Yeah.
It's
each run.
It just makes it so good.
Yeah, it should be good. And, you know, the tag you get from a snare is now annoying.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, if they've got Scorch in hand, which is what I run in one of my decks, that just kind of ruins everything, really.
Yeah. And it's interesting, because I heard a lot of stuff like, oh, she should, you know, totally be a criminal ID. But that would just make her too overpowered, though.
Maybe. It kind of rips the pants off of Argus as well.
Oh yeah. Tag or 2 meat damage. I'll take the tag and avoid it. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah.
yeah. That makes him really sad. Hadn't thought about Argus.
She's an interesting runner, and one that I think will see a resurgence of things like Code Siphon, because I can imagine that all the siphons will go into this deck.
Yeah, I played the Account Siphon, Code Siphon, Vamp, Jasminda deck. It was against a very fortress-like replicating perfection deck. And then when they started outmoneying me a few turns later, my Vamp became pretty useless because I couldn't get in, and I didn't have the money to drain them. So.
Oh yeah.
But no, I enjoyed what I played, and I did get mired quite a lot online in one game, and it's brutal because like a few R&D eyes out, they choose something like, I don't know, your economy, which you desperately need to draw, put that to the bottom of your deck, maybe trash something else, then possibly steal an agenda, and then they just run again and see like three fresh cards. It's ridiculous. It's like you can cycle through R&D so quickly with Maya out, and assuming they've got like stuff to trash and steal, then you're just thinning it out constantly, and that once a turn just putting that one thing they need at the bottom of R&D is just it's just harsh, especially if it's something like economy or the ice that they desperately need to keep you out. It's kind of a weird new kind of R&D lock where it's just kind of denial, and the corp has no idea what goes to the bottom either.
I know, it's a grand old thing, and then you can just play showing off.
Yeah. I like the idea of putting all the agenda to the bottom and then just doing a showing off run and just going,
oh yeah. Can you see the console, Maya, being splashed into any other runner decks?
Within Shaper or within Anarch or
within any. Let's cover all our bases.
Let me have a think.
Anti-segregational as possible.
It's three influence, so it's quite a hefty import if you want three of them. Mm. I don't know. I was wondering maybe about someone like Adam or someone maybe like that. Or I don't know. I don't know if that would work so well with Adam, but because I was thinking, because he has like that early HQ pressure with his directive, so maybe having that R&D pressure where he can kind of shuffle the card to the bottom, and then you can kind of get away from like the nasty things the court might be doing to you if you know you're running on a low hand size anyway. Criminal, I don't know, might be kind of a nice criminal additional R&D pressure type card.
Yeah,
I don't know. It feels like the two memory is very good for the cost, and it feels like this is like the if you want to run Opus all the time and you don't want to be Chaos Theory, then this is the kind of the console for you.
Makes sense.
Yeah,
makes complete sense. Oh dear, this and Chaos Theory and have all the MU.
Oh yeah, because I know like a few Chaos Theory decks are running like Multithreader and some of Sunny's Breakers as well, and it's just like,
yeah,
they have like 7 or 8 MU, so this will kind of get rid of the Akamatsu mem chips in maybe some of those builds.
I don't have anything more to say about this.
Cool. I'm glad you're reading the next card because I cannot pronounce it.
Oh, Panchatantra.
I'm just Panchetta. It's Panchetta, I'm sorry. It's
Panchatantra.
I can't say it without stammering. I'm this is bad. It's Panchetta for the rest of my life, I'm afraid.
You are the least culturally sensitive.
At least I've got a good reason. It's not like I'm being insensitive. It's my speech impediment.
No, it's it is based off of a collection of animal fables from I think it's in Sanskrit, I think.
Oh right.
Hence the flavor text about children's stories.
Mm. By Guru.
By Guru, indeed.
I don't know. This if he was going to appear in any cycle, it feels like he would appear in this in kind of the Indian themed cycle.
Racist. Cool. Right. Well, Panchatantra is a 2-cost 1 MU program for Shapers. 2 influence, and once per turn, when you encounter a piece of ice, you may have it gain one subtype of your choice that is not Sentry, Codegate, or Barrier for the remainder of this run. So,
you know what I did with this card?
What?
I did the thing that everyone was saying, and I put I made a gingerbread dinosaurus.
Yep.
Panchetta deck.
Right, say it with me. Pancha Tantra.
Pancha
Tantra.
I can say it even like I can't do it as one word though.
Pancha Tantra.
No, it's gone. Right.
Do you have trouble saying Parisia as well in Sahasrara?
I can say Parisia.
Yeah,
I think this is because it's the ch 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 like that, and it's basically just a stutter in a word anyway. So I'm screwed.
Yes, the gingerbread deck making gingerbread maybe relevant? Question mark.
I named it Gingersaurus, which I felt was the most relevant name you could come up with.
Indeed.
But it's I ran it out of Chaos Theory because I needed the MU, and I thought having a small deck would allow me to get my three Panchettas really quickly.
Panchatantra.
It's not going to happen, dude. But yeah, it's I don't know. It was really slow to set up, and then it didn't help. I was playing against a Wayland deck, and they pretty much before I'd even found one of them had double iced most of their servers, and I was just like, oh fuck. But once it got going, it was quite good, and I had like R&D eyes out to kind of get the multi access going. But it was just, I don't know, it, because I was having to, because the only breakers I was running were two Gingerbread, two Deus Ex, and two Sharpshooter. I was really
out. Oh, what, the only cards that would benefit from this?
Yeah, literally, yeah. But well, you know, once Gingerbread's on Dinosaurus, you're kind of set, and it's you know, really really efficient getting in when you name everything as Tracer. But then it's you're tapping it out for one piece of ice, and if they're three ice deep, one run uses all three of them, and then you can't run anywhere else, and it's pain. So it was unfortunate that the Gingerosaurus deck didn't work out better. Maybe against like a slightly lighter iced corporation, I could have run multiple times, but
yeah,
it definitely, this is not one that you should potentially be going all in on like that.
No, not yet. Anyway, it's a card that needs an accomplice.
Yeah,
an accomplice card.
And the Shapers are getting one as well.
Are they?
Yeah, it's to minor spoiler territory, but it's a program. It's one of the new Diva programs, or Deva. I'm not quite sure which pronunciation.
Deva.
And it's basically that Deva breaks subroutines on ice that has three or more subtypes. So you use Pancetta to give the ice another subtype, and then you can use the Deva to get past it. But the one thing as well that I mean, we'll cover this more when it actually gets released. But it occurred to me that Deva is going to wreck Byroids, because most of them already have three subtypes.
Yep.
So that's going to be really interesting. That just powers through HB decks. But no, I like this, and I know I've heard like the weird things you can like name wrap around as a Fractor and get it back to strength zero, or name Enforcer 1.0 as a console and get it to trash itself.
Yeah.
Don't know how legal they are. It seems the ruling keeps getting flip flopped around a bit.
Well, yeah.
We'll see where it lands.
I think that's all we can do at this point.
Because half the rulings seem to be, oh, subtypes aren't card dependent, so you could give, you know, ice the subtype of an icebreaker. But then other rulings just go, no, that's silly. Why would you do that? But I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting card. I think, yeah, like you said, this is going to be one that gets stronger properly when there are, you know, the cards that go with it.
Exactly.
But it was nice. Gingerbread had a nice, you know, day in the sun. It's 15 minutes of fame.
Right. Moving on.
Moving on is Artist Colony. It's a zero-cost resource location for Shapers, 3 influence, and it says, the scariest bold text ever, forfeit an agenda. For that princely cost, you search your stack for a card and install it. Paying the install cost, shuffle your stack. So this is basically the Shaper equivalent of Data Dealer or Frame Job, which are
my god, it is not worth it.
Really?
I don't think forfeiting an agenda.
Well,
to search your stack for a card. I mean, what are you desperately looking for?
Well, the ones I've heard a lot is, oh, you can get the Plascree to instant speed now, and then you don't die from the Scorched Earth. But I don't know. If you think like, you know, with SMC and stuff like that, Shapers are all about kind of pulling out the right thing at the right time to get in. So imagine that you can do that with, you know, any other nasty surprise that you could get, or if there's just something, I don't know, maybe there's like a big, like, I don't know, ridiculous 60 card Shaper deck out there where Artist Colony would benefit to be like a mega tutor for anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I just can't see it being as relevant as, I don't know. It's, I don't know. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, things, you know, you can use it to get rid of things like Sheik Hugh and
News Team. Yeah,
but I don't know. Is it worth it?
I guess that's like going to be on a game by game basis of, you know, if getting rid of the agenda is worth the card that you can pull out of your deck. But I mean, you know, what do Shapers run that they can't already really pull out of their deck? I mean, they have all the program tutoring, so it's probably not going to be a program.
So, I mean, you're right with the Plascrete, maybe.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, like I say, off the top of my head, I can't really think of anything else that you would really need at instant speed. Although, Shapers do have Fansight in faction, so they can add that to their score area as an agenda and then forfeit it with Artist Colony.
This is true. This is true.
So there is always that, but again, it's the question of what are you tutoring?
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest question of an article. I mean, like, if there's something you desperately need.
I just don't know what it would be. The only thing I can think of really is a Plascreet.
Yeah. Or maybe
a film critic?
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that's not a bad idea, actually.
You know, you've got an agenda, you don't want to take the what's a bad agenda? My mind's gone completely blank.
Well, if you just want to steal the Future Perfect and not play the damn side game.
Exactly. You're just like, oh, this is me done for for the game. Like, next turn I'm getting the Future Perfect in.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, but I don't know how much play we'll see with this card.
Mm.
I guarantee it'll give you some cracking plays when you actually pull it out of the bag.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
it's gonna be interesting. But I mean, the thing that sets us apart from the other kind of forfeit cards that the criminals and the Anarchs have is this is not a click ability. So you can do this, you know, mid run on the corporation's turn. You know, all these weird places that don't require you to be clicking for things. So yeah, I think that's the niche, really, isn't it? It's being able to do something in these weird microns of response time that you get. This is where this kind of card will pull things out.
Yeah, it's.
I do like your film critic idea. To be fair, though, I think that's quite a nice one because, again, film critic, even though it was like the silver bullet to end all silver bullets, it's still like maybe just a one of in shaper decks and kind of even out of faction.
Yeah.
So yeah, being able to tutor that out without having to do something like hostage is obviously quite good, but obviously at the cost of an agenda.
Yeah.
Although it would be hilarious to sacrifice your fan site to pull out your film critic. Just through your artist colony.
Yeah, through your artist colony. It was a fan site, now that person has graduated and become a film critic. Welcome to the future.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, they could have graduated from Chatterjee University. Shut up.
No, I was really enjoying the segue.
Yes, Chatterjee University, otherwise known as one of my favourite cards in this pack.
Yep.
It is a one-cost resource, a Ritzy location, and it has some great text on it. For a click, place one power counter on Chatterjee University. And the second ability, for a click, install a program from your grip, lowering the install cost by one for each power counter on Chatterjee University. Remove one hosted power counter.
So I feel this is the way the IT department should have been worded.
Yep.
Because this makes a lot more sense. And it is basically the runner equivalent of IT department.
It is. But I think this will see a lot more use because it means that things like the Femme we talked about earlier, the pain in the ass, and Garrote, and Torch, because I love running a Torch, it makes everything cheaper.
It's just ridiculous because you get this up to what nine tokens, so you spend what two and a bit turns clicking on this, and then you install your Femme, remove one. You install your Torch, remove one. You install your Garrote, remove one. And in nine turns, you've saved yourself a ton of credit. You saved yourself what, like 16 credits because obviously it ticks down, and then if you kind of keep it at that high level, you just kind of click it a few more times and you can pull out something else that's big. You know what? If you spend 18 turns clicking this stuff, you could get yourself a monolith out.
Oh, man.
And then still have 17, then 16, then 15, then 14 credits worth more clicking to do.
Is it... Do you think it's... The play would go like this. First, click Chatterjee.
Yeah.
Next three clicks, power counters. Next four clicks, power counters. Next four clicks, power counters. Next four clicks, power counters. Then install all your big icebreakers.
Maybe, yeah.
three turns of, I have a Chatterjee. I'm doing nothing but clicking my Chatterjee.
It's really interesting because I think this is... Because when you're just saying that, it was reminding me a lot of a Personal Workshop. But instead of obviously it ticking down once per turn and then you throw credits into it to speed it up.
Yeah.
This is just like you click furiously to load this up, and then it's just like, right, bam, 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 bam. Here's all my huge stuff.
Yeah. throw down the Torch, the Morning Star, and the Garrote. Right, let's go.
And if you think about people who play weird big stuff, Professor, and thematically at the university, so Maybe.
Yeah. He got kicked out of his old university, out of Levy, and he moved to India and went to Chatterjee.
But he still has his Levy access, though.
Oh, yeah, naturally. No, I don't know. It would take me a while to work out the economics behind this. I think someone on NetrunnerDB did the first comment about it. It just actually does a lot of the numbering for you, like the actual economics for it.
Yeah. But no, it's instead of clicking for credits and stuff like that, you just load this up, and then it's kind of, it's set for the game, and then, you know, assuming, you know, you do the FEM, you're left with 8. If you need to install another FEM, you click it one more time, and then you install the next FEM, and it's, yeah, then you kind of have, as long as you kind of, if you keep it floating around a good number, then it's only going to require you a couple of clicks to get it back up to, you know, the big number that you need it to be at again.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't only have to have it as a big number. You could do the Sherman Striker Shrike. Because I think if you get 5 clicks on it, 5 power counters, that actually covers you for it.
Yeah, because they're 5, 4, and 3 to install, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, even something like that is, you know, then you've got your three breakers out for, well, 5 clicks, or 6 clicks because you want to install Chatterjee.
Yeah.
9 clicks. So, yeah, in 9 clicks you have 3 icebreakers out, and you still have 2 counters left on Chatterjee.
Yeah, and then you can just spend your time getting money.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting one.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be interesting to see where this one goes, and I can see some, like you say, not just the big stuff, but like the kind of the moderately priced stuff as well.
But you would be sad if you spent 3 turns clicking on this, and then they hit you with a tag, and then just trash it immediately. It's like, oh no.
Yeah, that would be quite sad.
Right, let's move on to the Corp cards, and I know you like this one.
I do, yeah. I actually got a chance to play with this quite a bit. It is Advanced Concept Hopper. It's a 4-2 HB agenda, research agenda, if that matters, and it's the first time the runner initiates a run. Each turn, you may draw 1 card or gain 1 credit. I was running this in HB Engineering the Future, and it's like having double Engineering the Future ability.
And once you score it, obviously.
Once you score it, and you know, if anyone can score a 4-2 out, it's ETF, because their servers are crazy to get through anyway.
Oh yeah.
I was running 3 of them because I wanted to see it early and kind of get it out. And I did have some annoying games in the tournament I was at where I did not draw a single economy card. No hedge fund, no Eves, no Adonises, no restructures in the entire game. And my economy package for the game literally was the ID ability and this ability. And it just about kept me in the game. Well, long enough to lose anyway, but still. That's what happens when you don't draw your hedge funds. I really like this ability because just that... It's the same way that I really liked Special Offer. Because you might not have quite enough to res that thing that they're running into. They initiate the run, you gain the credit, you can now res that piece of ice and do the nasty thing. Something it also does really well is if you're about to get legworked, you can draw 1 card with it, add another card in to dilute your hand. And the secret tech that it works amazingly well with is IQ. Because they initiate a run towards IQ, even if it's res or unres, you just draw another card and IQ gains 1 more strength. Which is quite nice, because if they're running something like Passport, you can just bump it into the next echelon of boosting and have to make them spend more credits.
Yes.
Which is quite nice. But no, I really like this. It's it feels like you could put this in instead of, you know, ABT or Vitruvius, or depending on what your makeup of your deck was, because it's a solid 4-2, it's got a really good ability, the runner's going to be making runs against you if they want to win. So yeah, you can basically kind of get a credit for your install on your turn, then gain another credit when the runner runs in the next turn. It's just nice. It's just a really good card.
I have very little more to say about it. I have not played with it. Yeah, it sounds good. What I have come across though is Vikram 1.0. It is a Bioroid Sentry. 5 strength, 6 cost, and the text is, the runner can spend click to break any subroutine on Vikram 1.0. For the first subroutine, the runner cannot use programs the remainder of this run. Second subroutine, trace 4, if successful, do 1 brain damage. And the third subroutine, trace 4, if successful, do 1 brain damage. this is a horrible card.
It's an amazing card.
I do not like this card at all.
It's good.
I would even go so far as to say, fuck this card.
I was obviously running this in my Engineer in the Future deck along with Concept Hopper, and
yeah,
it's just good. And especially when the runner goes, oh, I'll click through the brain damage, and then you remind them that if they don't break the first subroutine, their four countered medium is going to do fuck all on their run against R&D. And all of a sudden it's, shit.
Is that how that works? I thought it was only paid abilities, because that's when the runner's successful, isn't it? Is that considered part of the run?
No, the runner cannot use programs. It's the same as... There's another
run. But for the remainder of this run, I didn't know whether when the runner was successful. What I've read is that it doesn't stop medium or nerve agent or keyhole. It's only, like, paid abilities during the run.
See, I thought it was... this will have to double check this. To the internet. Yes.
Sorry, we had a good... we're putting some elevator music out. We had a good 20-minute conversation about Vikram and whether it triggers with a medium.
Or anything, any other nasty...
Or any other programs. Turns out, kind of.
So it appears, yeah, you'd get the counters for Nerve Agent and Medium, but you wouldn't be able to use the multi-accessibility of those programs, because it's still... When you access cards, when the run is successful, you're still in the run... And you may use those abilities on those programs. So yeah, Vikram does protect you, it seems, from medium and keyhole and all those other evil mostly anarch things, really, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of anarch things.
But also, this is quite nice because, you know, if they run through this, then they can't use their breakers, which is nice.
Oh dear me. Well, yes, Vikram.
It's a nasty Bioroid. It's brilliant. Two trace fours.
Yeah, it's a replacement for an Itchy, really. That's how I see it. I would pick this over Itchy 1.0.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because it's just more annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, especially because if I've been playing again with Itchy 1.0 recently, and the...
A lot of people have...
The trace one is just such a bum trace for a tag and a brain damage. And if the runner already has one link, it's just like... Because the thing that a lot of people weren't wise to originally was like, oh yeah, I'll break everything. But now people just like, I'll break the first two, let the trace fire. And it's just like, you know, they probably, if they have the money to contest it, like the corporation's not going to sink money to give a tag which they might not be able to use if they're not a super, you know, trashy deck.
Yeah.
Resource trashy deck, and then the brain damage is negligible depending on the runner and the, you know, if they've got something in hand, if they have like an apocalypse in hand and you want to try and snipe it, yeah, I'll boost the trace, but I don't know, I feel a lot of times the Itchy trace is just left at trace one and that's it. Whereas two trace fours is just nasty stuff, and I've got a few people with surprise Vikrams really early on, and having three cards in their hand slows the runner down so much for the entire game.
I'd replace it as well. Simply, it's more positional, so you need to have it. I would probably recommend having it as like the outermost piece of ice.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, that first sub kind of is slightly less effective.
Yeah.
I mean, provided they're not, you know, running.
Mediums and nerve agents and keyholes.
Mediums and moving, yeah. Running anarch bullshit.
But as well, I mean, this stops SMC firing and stuff like that, so.
This is true.
It's also
this
really nice, true. Really nice effect.
But again, like, you can just if it's the innermost thing, it won't affect you. You won't need to use your SMC to get through this
true,
on this
yeah.
run. Yeah. Either way, do you want to do the next card?
I will. It's Heritage Committee. It's a Jinteki card. It's one cost, two influence, and it is a brand new subtype. So while the runners are getting consumer grade, the corporations are getting alliance. And basically what Alliance does is it adds additional deck-building criteria that you can meet. So, for example, on Heritage Committee, the card costs 0 influence instead of 2 if you have 6 or more non-Alliance Jinteki cards in your deck. And then the ability of the card is to draw 3 cards, add 1 card from HQ to the top of R&D.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a really neat ability, especially because you can draw 3 cards and then put the snare you had in your hand back on top of R&D.
Yes, you can. Yeah, it's interesting. It works well with Mutate.
Yeah.
But those really are the only two things I can think of.
Well,
that it works really well with.
I just think
in Jinteki.
I think it's just like a nice in-faction draw for Jinteki as well.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I looked at it and I was not thrilled. Like I have been with some of the, you know, some cards you look at, you oh my god, this is going to be so good with this and this, and I looked at it and went, you know, it's an interesting one.
I think this is going to be the kind of card that you'll know if you want in your deck or not, and it's, I don't know, it's the alliance trait is interesting on the card as well.
Yes, it encourages pushing your deck towards one way of playing or another, really. It's interesting. It's very interesting. Yeah.
The thing I like about this, because a little while ago on NetrunnerDB there was a thread about this, the idea of joint operations, I think they called it. So, you know, in the way that Custom Biotics can't use Jinteki.
Yes.
It's kind of, what if there was like a joint... Oh, no, it's joint venture, that's what it's called. Joint ventures between corporations. So, what if there was a Wayland NBN identity that you just could only use those...
Well, we've talked about that before as well.
And I think Alliance is basically that in a way. So it's like, if you're going to have six Jinteki cards in your deck anyway, because you're kind of building like a weird, I don't know, Wayland Jinteki...
ABT, Heritage Committee mix.
Yeah, maybe, even something like that. And... or even you're doing this in the foundry, and then you can reliably know that you have like a piece of ice on the top of R&D. Actually, yeah, that's really good. This in the foundry, right? I've just convinced myself to start playing the foundry again.
No. I'm sorry.
I like the foundry.
I know you're the only one who does.
I'll make it good.
You will.
I've been backing Ken since way before episode one, so now he's coming to his own. So I feel.
Look, we've all have our crosses to bear.
I feel some ownership over his.
I know you do. It's okay, we're all here as part of this weird self-help group you formed in the form of this podcast.
Yeah, I kind of needed it.
Yeah.
What's next?
Well, next card. Oh my god, it's Mumbad City Grid. Mumbad City Grid is a Jinteki grid. An upgrade for a region, 3 costs, 3 to trash. Whenever the runner passes a piece of ice protecting the server, you may swap the ice with another piece of ice protecting the server. Limit 1 region per server, naturally. This is it's an odd one, I have to admit. It's also known as, hey, I've got a quandary and then a toll booth, and fuck your quandary, you're hitting a toll booth 3 times.
Well, they'd have to pass the first quandary, and then you whatever you need, you need some weird positional goodness.
It's very odd, isn't it?
Yeah. Because what do you need? They need to pass the first piece of ice.
You hit the toll booth.
Yeah.
And then you have...
Then you swap it with the quandary behind it.
Then they hit that toll booth, and you swap with the quandary behind it.
Yeah.
And then you hit the toll booth again.
So, yeah, whatever you need, the nastiest piece of ice, or to be the outermost, to just keep forcing the runner to hit it again and again. Imagine if it's like an archer or something ridiculous like that. Just keep wiping
and
them
then
out.
And then if they manage to get past the toll booth, you move that to the front of the queue again, and then recycle the whole thing.
You know what card actually would work really well with this? Is I think it's called Sunset, and it's a very, very forgotten Jinteki card. And you choose a server, and you rearrange the ice protecting that server.
Oh wow!
So
that is I do remember this.
You daisy chain the toll booth to the back, and then you sunset it back to the front, and then just let them do it all again. Assuming they didn't trash the Mumbai City grid when they made it to the end, which they probably didn't. If they hit a toll booth 3 times, that's at least 9 credits they lost.
You know, you could have a Tenma line in there as well, which is another card that no one ever sees. The Tenma line, which for a click allows you to swap 2 pieces of installed ice.
Of course, yeah. And so you could swap ice in position 1 and 3.
Oh, wow. You know, I thought about Tollbooth, but I was wrong. Yeah. Kamainu.
Oh, just constantly hitting Kamainu. Oh, man.
Yeah, and they stay for the remainder of the run. So potentially, you could have 10, 15 subs on it.
That's mean. I like it. That's really good.
But it also works for things like quicksand.
Oh yeah, because you keep encountering it, so you keep adding the counter, so you can potentially have, you know, two or three boost the quicksand a few times, put it back to the front. And thematically, that's brilliant as well, because they just keep slipping further and further into the quicksand.
Yes, yes, they do.
That's quite nice, actually.
I like this, and I am putting it in my Jinteki deck, because I've got Combiners in there, and it would just be funny to have... what was it? It was a Combiner, then a... Lockdown.
Yeah.
Combiner, Cortex Lock. Hit the lockdown. The lockdown fires. After they pass the lockdown, swap it with the swap the Cortex Lock or the Combiner around.
Yeah.
And then they hit the Combiner twice, but they can't draw any more cards at the end of the run.
Oh. And especially with lockdown, because obviously that's free to res. Actually, that's not a very expensive server. You can construct there. It's quite you can do that
not
quite
at all.
Cheap. Yeah.
It's an awful way of pissing off a runner. I'll tell you that much.
And with it being an upgrade, you can put this on HQ or R&D.
Yes, indeedy.
Where you know they're going to run at one point, you think, anyway.
Well, you hope so.
You hope.
Right, do you want to...
Yes, it is. Caligoda Real TV. It's for NBN. It's zero to res. It's an asset, a cast. It's four to trash. And when your turn begins, you may look at the top card of the runner's stack. That's weird. You can also trash Caligoda Real TV, and the runner trashes the top card of his or her stack. So this is kind of like a reverse global sec security clearance where...
It is. Do you know what else I call this card?
Yeah.
Goodbye, Levy.
Yeah, actually, yeah. It's... as well, because the thing I like about this is if the runner's coming to trash it and they have four credits and you know they're going to trash it, you just trash it before they can trash it. And
yep.
Then you've just trashed a card from the top of their... It might not be the one you wanted to trash from the top of their stack.
But it will certainly annoy them.
It'll stop them. I mean, unless you wanted the credit drain itself. So this is just... It's basically the equivalent of Jackson. It's like, you can keep using Jackson until they run on it, and then you just pop Jackson. This... You can just keep knowing what the runner's going to draw, which is, you know, pretty darn good if you're playing targeted marketing. Because you know every single card the runner is drawing until they come and deal with this. And then you trash it and hopefully get rid of something good, or know you're getting rid of something good.
Yeah, you could trash that mongoose you're so fond of.
Yeah, yeah, you could trash the breaker that they're ever so. If the runner test runs something, then
yes,
you can trash that. And hope they can't clone chip it back out.
Yeah, get rid of a Hades shard.
Yeah, man,
the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, imagine if it's like a one of in the deck as well, like just the limit one per deck type cards the runner can run, and then all of a sudden you're just getting rid of it, and you know, especially if it's in criminal, like with no recursion, you just trash the things they need. And you have three of these, and then you know you just pull them back with Jackson or any shenanigans, and you just keep doing it. And it's a shame they don't stack, but I think it would be way too powerful if they did. I like it. I think this is good, and I think this is because you remember cards like Data Hound and Snoop and those kind of invasion of privacy, that kind of stuff. I think hopefully, because there is a new NBN identity that's going to be all about looking at the runner's grip, and I hope that's not going to just be used for more meat damage, because it's a 17 influence.
Of course, it
one
will.
That's,
don't be
that,
silly.
That needs the runner to be tagged. And
it's an NBN card, yeah. Of course it's
and,
you can
and,
use
and you'll see
damage.
Their grip, so you'll know if they've got I've had worse in hand, so you know you could kill them. It's a shame it's going to be, you know, just the next Butcher Shop deck. But there could be something interesting in, you know, knowing what the runner's about to draw, knowing what's in their hand, and just destroying the runner. Because Invasion of Privacy is you trace them and then you name a type of card and then trash as many as the trace exceeded the link or something like that.
Something like that.
So you can just, if you know the runner's, you know, loaded up on events, you just trace them, you then say event, and then the runner's lost five cards, and then you knew they were going to draw something decent, so you just trash Caligoda as well. It's just like, yeah, you got nothing, dude, sorry.
Oh, man. Right, next up is a little bit of ice for NBN. It is a two-cost code gate, four strength, called Interrupt Zero. Subroutines are, for the remainder of this run, the runner must pay one credit as an additional cost each time he or she uses an icebreaker to break at least one subroutine. And that subroutine is repeated again, because I'm not reading out the whole section. This is an interesting one. Essentially, throw this down in front of a tollbooth, is what I can see. Or, yeah, it's an interesting one. It's, I don't know what else to say about it, really.
I think this could be potentially really good, because if you remember, Midway Station Grid basically does the same thing.
Yeah.
So then you're... Yes,
kind of.
Yeah. It's more or less the same kind of... causing the runner to pay more for the things. For the icebreakers and stuff like that. So, yeah, it could be some nice kind of financially taxing servers you can set up that way. Four strength code gets pretty good as well. Two to res.
Yeah.
Kind of classic NBN... Cheap to res, high strength kind of ice.
It'd be useful for things like Spiderweb and Hive.
Yeah, and
well, early game Hive anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point actually. Yeah, anything with lots of subroutines on it.
Yes.
Or even something just as annoying like an archer. It's just like you have to get it to 6 strength, and then you have to pay four subroutines, and then pay additional even against Grail or something like that, where it's pretty much always going to be 3 subs.
Oh yeah. No, it's a good one. It's a nice little hey, look at this piece of ice. You're doomed. Kind of a thing. It's more of an irritation than anything else. It makes things that more expensive. And if they've calculated a precise amount, like even if it is a toll booth, and I can get then yeah, it throws them off completely.
Yeah. No, I like it. The one thing I can't get over is like, because I know it's two little bugs kind of blocking a data stream, but to me, just if you tilt your head to the left a little bit, it kind of looks like a face. You kind of got the eyes and the mouth. That's all I see when I look at it, and I know it's not that.
Just going,
and it does look like someone just, you know, spewing out like a blue cylinder. But
oh dear me! Right, do you want to do the next one?
Cool. Next, we have Dedication Ceremony. It's a one cost operation for Wayland. Place 3 advancement tokens on a face up card. You cannot score that card until the start of your next turn, or until your next turn begins. It reads. But you can do some funky stuff with Ronins and Grindle Refineries.
The Grindles.
What was it you did on me? It was install Grindle Refinery, res Grindle Refinery, play Dedication Ceremony.
Crashing
Grindle for 12 credits.
Yep. Lets you throw down advancement tokens on Oaktown renovation, or any of the renovations for that matter.
Yeah, well, you don't get the benefit of putting the tokens on there in the first place. It does bump it up to the critical mass it needs to overscore and do the fun abilities. So you can immediately get underway renovation to the trash, the trashing the runner's stack. Can get Hollywood pretty close to being able to score stuff out of hand in a single turn.
Yep. Well, and you know, just being able to throw this down and making a fast advance Wayland.
Yeah, I mean, there's already kind of those tools in Titan anyway that you can kind of start with and pull in.
I mean, you can't score it till your next turn, but hey. Gets you to a point where you've got 3 on one card, and then it also lets you throw in some nasty traps.
Yeah, exactly. Just like you can have a one advanced Ronin, and then you can res it, Dedication Ceremony it, and then use it.
And you know, there's a lot of advanceable ice as well.
Yeah, so finally,
maybe Woodcutter.
Yeah, was it Tyrant Woodcutter and Salvage?
Tyrant Woodcutter. Yep.
the advance only when resed. Ice.
Yes. It's like you res a woodcutter and someone looks at you and goes, what the hell are you doing? Hey, a couple of dedication ceremonies later, who's a fool? It's you. It's still you for putting woodcutter in your deck. Don't build your deck around woodcutter and tyrant.
Maybe this is the cycle that redeems them.
I doubt it.
Oh, cool. What's next on the list, Steph?
On the next part of the list is Mumba Temple. Mumba Temple is an alliance facility. One cost... 3 to trash, 2 influence, neutral card. This card costs 0 influence if you have 15 or fewer ice in your deck, and it gives you 2 recurring credits, and you can use these credits to res cards. I don't know, it's things that you can run to res Pad and Adonis campaigns.
Yeah.
Lets you res a Sundew. Trying to think of other things now.
Although Sundew does make its money back straight away, though.
Indeed.
You can have 3 of these out and res a Sansan City Grid for free.
Good. Yeah. You have less ice in your deck than you probably want, but I don't know.
Well, I don't know, because I was running like an asset
15
spam.
15 ice. It's
asset spam it's, Nearth Hub with like 13 ice, and it kind of was crying out.
It's not a ton of. It's not less ice than I've run in decks before, so. Yeah, it's a nice little economy card.
Yeah. No, I like it. It's kind of like a mini route, except you can't, you know, use the credits to advance things.
Yeah, but you can use it to resin Adonis, which will annoy people.
That's true. The only thing I don't like about this card is that it's obviously meant for asset spammy decks. Yes. But it's just at that kind of trash cost. I think of it as like the wizard trash cost of, at 3 credits, the runner doesn't mind as much trashing it. Like, once you get like 4 or 5 credits, that's when the runner really questions about trashing something. And if you don't have much ice in your deck, you can't really protect it. So you're probably going to put this out naked a lot of the time. So I guess in a way you kind of need to kind of spend the credit straight away. I mean, resing it costs 1, then you use the 2 credits. So you kind of, in essence, earn a credit from it straight away. Yeah. So that kind of helps redeem it a little bit. But I don't know. You kind of maybe want to have like a few of these out in one fell swoop and then just like res something big and be like, haha, right.
Yeah, it's an interesting little throw in, and it could really ruin someone's day.
Yeah, no, I like it, and I like the, as we'll see with the next card as well, that this kind of, while the corporation's got the have 6 or more of that corporation's cards in your deck, the neutral's got really interesting deck buildy ones.
Oh yes.
But I mean, both of these neutral ones really benefit IG, and makes IG a fucking pain to play against, because this in IG is just, you know, you're not trashing it because the cost is definitely not 3. But no, I think it's a really, really nice card, and again, I like this idea of you building your deck in a certain way, and instead it's kind of nice that the cards are going, here is a way to build your deck that if you want to incorporate this card without influence, if not, no worries, but then it's kind of giving you that kind of hint of, oh, maybe I could build a deck with 15 or fewer ice in it. And slightly related to Mumba Temple is Museum of History. It's also a 1-res, 3-cost asset. It's a alliance again. It's Ritzy this time, and it says this card costs 0 influence if you have 50 or more cards in your deck. And when your turn begins, you may shuffle 1 card from Archives into R&D. So no need to run that Hades fragment anymore. You just run a couple of these and make the game last forever.
Yep. Always fun. Just keep throwing more and more traps in.
Yeah, no, it's... like I said, like both of these work really well in Industrial Genomics, because you raise the trash cost.
Oh, yeah.
And then you... you can res things with Mumba Temple, and then you just put in the face-up cards back into your deck with Museum of History, and then you just, because you care about the face-down cards, and then, you know, once they're face-up cards, you just put them back in the deck, because, you know, then you can draw your diversified portfolio again and make 20 credits.
Yeah. Kind of ruins an indexing run as well.
Yes. Oh, man, yeah. Also, it's kind of like it's another Jackson kind of safety net type card. Where if you have like agendas in your archives and the runner's not going to run on it, then you can kind of next turn put them back in safely into your deck. Or even put Jackson's back into your deck, because, you know, there's that awful moment where you've used 2 Jacksons and they've trashed your last Jackson. It's like, oh, fuck's sake. Now there's kind of like a way to get him back should he be trashed. But no, it's cool. And this again, the 50 or more card thing is an interesting design space. Maybe get people to think about not just playing the 49 card corp decks. But obviously, yeah, you need to run the additional agenda points to bulk it up to 50, so probably 1 or 2 of those additional cards are going to be agendas anyway.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, it could be interesting. Again, I played against Industrial Genomics that ran both of these new neutral cards, and it's a pain. It's a pain to play against them. And it's just because they just keep putting their money or their traps back into their deck, and they keep drawing them, and it's just... Like you say, you can't have a decent R&D run, because they're constantly diluting R&D every turn and just putting more and more stuff back in there until you deal with Museum of History. And if you trash one Museum of History, they can res another one and put that last museum back, the first museum back in, and it's like a more annoying Jackson Howard in a way. You know, Jackson at least has the decency to remove himself from the game. Museum of History is just, it's going to keep coming back as long as there's more of them.
Oh dear. Well, that is Caligoda.
Yeah.
First pack of the Mumba cycle. A bunch of interesting new gimmicks and food for thought. And I guess we'll probably talk about what we've been playing and everything next time.
Yeah, because I think we've both had the recent tournament experience. Talk about those.
One of us was more successful than the other.
Well, find out who next time.
Oh, it was you.
Damn it, now they won't listen.
Shut up, yes they will. Keep listening to us. Did we want to talk about the Patreon thing again?
Yeah, can do. And one of the things we mentioned on the last podcast was that Steph and I are considering doing a Patreon to help support the podcast. We are currently in the process of getting stuff transferred into SoundCloud as well, which is going to be an additional bit of money each month. Again, we don't mind paying ourselves, but if you are one of the few people out there who is interested in contributing, let us know. We'll hopefully... We might just set the Patreon up anyway, and then if people start like crying out it's the worst thing ever, we can just take it down. I don't know how Patreon works, but I assume you can do that.
You are forced to remain on Patreon forever. I'm fairly sure you can leave when you want.
There's some kind of once they have their 5% of your monthly earnings, they don't want to let you go, man. That's it.
What's 5% is nothing.
we're currently working on some big things behind the scenes for the website, and if it pans out how we're hoping, then it's going to be pretty exciting stuff. But we'll keep you posted and let you know when those exciting things are going to happen more in your face, as opposed to more behind the scenes as they are right now.
That was weird.
I know. I didn't really know. I kind of just started rambling and then couldn't stop.
It's all right. If you want more of Mark rambling, remember to tune in next time to
But in the meantime, if you want to contact us, the email address is nerdrunnerspodcast@gmail.com. You can also go to canlaugh.com/nerdrunners. That's where the podcast lives. There's a contact form on the website if you want to get in touch with us that way. We'll post on Reddit. You can find our decks that we're very bad at keeping up to date on NetrunnerDB as well. There's Twitter. I'm at Marcus Friend and Steph is at House of Moose. Netrunner DB wise, I'm also Marcus Friend and Steph is Ren, which is RYNN. I have had requests for people wanting to search for your Julie Engine Techie deck, so you should update that one, man. Yeah.
Oh, I'm kind of embarrassed to put it on there now.
Nah, it's good. It's good. It's painful to play against.
All right then.
I'm like one of the survivors. I need a special support group for it. I can have like a meta support group within the podcast itself for just playing against Julian Gentechi. And if you want to rate and review us on iTunes, that's also much appreciated. Tell some friends and say, hey, check out this podcast. It's pretty cool. I like it. You might like it too, because we both like Netrunner and it's a Netrunner podcast. Hooray for shared interests.
Okay. Well, and on that note, I guess we will see you next time.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Panchatantra. Panchatantra. Fuck's sake!